KKSL.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but there actually was music recorded before 1989.
Palomar College Radio.
And welcome back to Free Thought Radio. That was Chuck Schuldiner tribute special. And on the line with me now is Perry Grayson, the former guitarist of Destiny's End, the guitarist of Falcon, and also was a staff writer for Metal Maniacs. Perry, are you there?
Hey, Alex. How you doing, man?
Pretty good, pretty good. So what was the first article you wrote about death? And also talk a bit about that big retrospective, unless that was the first article you wrote about death.
Well, the first article I wrote about death was back in, I think it was 1995. I was publishing a little fanzine called Yawning Vortex, and it mostly was a horror and fantasy fiction kind of a zine, but I also had little snippets of metal in there too. So I wrote an article that was sort of a 10-year anniversary special on death called Things Seem So Eternal. And so that was the first thing I actually wrote on death. It just sort of felt like I needed to let out a little bit of news there about Control Denied, because Chuck had sent out a postcard to the Metal Crusade, the official death fan club, telling everybody that, hey, I'm going to do this new band called Control Denied, and we're going to have a singer, an actual melodic singer. And so that was like the end bit of it, just to announce the news about Control Denied. That was the first thing. And then on the pro level, the big, huge, massive article that I started, I think it was in around early 2001 and finished up around the time, just before Chuck died, called Precious Memories of Chuck Schuldiner. And then I actually had to update it because, unfortunately, he did pass away. So that was the second thing that I wrote for Metal Maniacs. Mm-hmm.
How'd you met Chuck before that? What was kind of your...
Yeah.
Talk a bit about just hanging out with the death guys on the tour bus. And
yeah. Sure, yeah. I know we've talked about this ourselves before a little bit. But for everyone else out there, I definitely started at the beginning. I didn't actually meet Chuck until it was December 98 on the Sound of Perseverance tour. Before that, I'd only sort of said hi to him at the gig that Death played at the Whiskey in early 92 on the Human tour. So I can't call that meeting him, but I met him in 98 on tour. I sort of had an in because I was in Destiny's End at the time. Wasn't just, a big fanboy. I was a big fanboy, but I was also, a pro musician myself, And there was a connection between Destiny's End and Chuck for a couple of reasons. One being that our singer, James Rivera, had been in Hellstar, had been approached by Chuck, I think it was in around early 97, to see if James wanted to sing for Control Denied. Chuck asked him if he would sing for him because Chuck was a Hellstar fan, and James turned him down. And a little while later, several months later, James wound up singing for New Eden, which sort of morphed into Destiny's End when I joined up, when they kicked out a previous guitarist. So there was a bit of sort of history there. And Shannon Hamm, who was the second guitarist in Death at the time and second guitarist in Control Denied as well, he was a Texas guy. And so it was James, our singer. So when I actually got a chance to say hey to Chuck at the Whiskey in Hollywood on the Sound of Perseverance tour, I sort of had something I could approach him with. I went, hey, you know, I'm from Destiny's End, and you know James and Shannon as well, knew James, and so that's how we got to talking. I also had Shirley Severance, who was working for our label Metal Blade at the time, give Chuck a copy of our first album at the Milwaukee Metal Fest, just kind of before the Perseverance tour, because I'm a massive Death fan, and I just absolutely had to try my hardest to see if Chuck would relent to taking us on the road. I just wanted to tour with Death. It would have just made my day, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, what was your first impressions of Chuck and of the rest of the band as well?
Chuck was really down to earth right from the start. You know, he didn't competitude. He was just really appreciative. You know, because I was a fan. You know, I was there and just like bugging him for an autograph and all of that stuff, and giving him positive vibes about the new album. And all of that, and even, you know, giving him positive vibes about Control Denied, which they didn't have an album out at that point. Mm-hmm. So, he was very cool, and he asked me, you know, oh, are you going to come back tomorrow, you know, come to Ventura, which is about roughly, 40 miles or so north of L.A.? And I'm like, yeah, of course. I'm going to be there, you know. So he's like, yeah, come down tomorrow, you know, we'll hang out tomorrow. And, I probably spent a bit more time hanging out with Shannon, even at the Whiskey, because it was a nut house at the Whiskey. It was being filmed, as you know, for the Death in L.A. Live and Raw DVD, and Chuck was really, you know, scrambling from one person to the next and just, you know, trying to take care of a lot of business, too, so... He really didn't have a lot of time to talk that night, but he was that cool that he made a point of actually, you know, taking time out of his, you know, really swamped kind of schedule and did hang out and talk for a little bit and sign stuff. And that's the way he was. He was not pretentious in the least with fans. And, so, basically, to make a long story short, yeah, I went out the next day to Ventura and pestered Chuck and Shannon and Scott Clendenin and the Hammerfall guys for more autographs. And then after that, ended up hanging out before soundcheck and watching Chuck just jamming by himself. He was just standing there on stage with his stealth and rocking out by himself in front of his Marshall stack and playing all sorts of new riffs. And it was just amazing. I would say, I'd compare it to taking a trip back in time to the Woodstock era and watching Jimi Hendrix just jamming by himself or something. That's the way it was for me, because as much as I love Hendrix, I would say that Chuck was probably, for me, a bit more important, just being that I wasn't around in the late 60s, early 70s. So mm-hmm. Chuck was my contemporary guitar hero. So, yeah, I probably shouldn't have been there, but I was, and he didn't kick me out or anything, and as a matter of fact, he jumped off the stage before the rest of the guys came and said, hey man, what's your full name so I can put you on the list? And he put me on the door so, you know, I could get in for free. And he just let me stick around through the entire sound check. We hung out for a bit then. And then Chuck had a lot of business to take care of and probably had to rest his voice and stuff. So he kind of took off for a while, and I spent basically the whole rest of the afternoon and the early evening hanging out with Shannon Hamm and Scott Clendenin and getting to know them, sharing a few beers and talking about metal. Everyone was really diehard like me back then about really melodic, like progressive metal bands like Fates Warning and Queensryche and Watchtower, and we were just kind of, and even Rush and Yes and stuff like that, you know, on the progressive rock side of the spectrum. And yeah, it was just, you know, sort of like a dream come true, hanging out with your favorite band, you know, my favorite band too. And then after the gig, after it was all over, they invited me onto the bus, and I just spent probably about, I would say it's probably close to a few hours, probably 3 hours, just hanging out with the guys, both Hammerfall and Death. And we were planning around listening to Pat Boone in a Metal Mood, which was, I don't know, for people out there who don't know who Pat Boone was or is, he was a sort of white bread, easy listening type singer, very religious, who would do like reworkings of naughty rock songs at the time, you know, back in, what, you know, 50s, 60s, really kind of, you know, tame renderings of them. And so he did all these covers of metal songs, like, say, Crazy Train from Ozzy and, mm-hmm. and you know, whatever, Quiet Riot and stuff like that, old 80s metal. And so that was, you know, hilarious watching Chuck and the guys kind of, you know, goof on that. And we were just hanging out, talking, listening to metal. I remember that Chuck and Oscar Droniak from Hammerfall were really digging on Stradivarius back then. Not that I really dig them, but that was their sort of band of the moment. And it just sort of tells you what Chuck was into at the time and where his head was at. He was also, you know, was digging on, I remember was digging on Manowar's latest. And yeah, it was just, I was sitting there next to Chuck for most of the time, and he leaned over. We were looking at, he was staring at this tissue box on the bus. It was from the James River Industrial Supply Company. And Chuck looked over at me, and looked over at the tissue box, and he goes, "Hey, Perry." And he went and grabbed for his Sharpie that he used to sign stuff with, and went to go write in an A to clown on Destiny's End's singer, James Rivera. And it was kind of like him kind of having a dig at James, I guess, in a way. Because even though Chuck was a Hellstar fan, I know he felt really bummed that James turned him down. And also, in a way, I could sense that Chuck really was dying to get Control Denied out there on the map, get an album out, and tour with Control Denied, because that was where his heart was. Mm-hmm. And so, in a way, yeah, he was having a little, taking the piss out of, you could say, out of James a little bit there, which was kind of funny. And yeah, it was really kind of sad to go, but I had to. I had to work the next day. It was a weekday. But I stayed there until, yeah, it was pretty early in the morning. I think it was about, probably roughly about somewhere near 4 in the morning when I finally left. And they had to go up to San Francisco, I think, the next day. Yeah, I remember showing up for work after having about, you know, maybe an hour and a half sleep, and explaining to my boss that, oh, yeah, I was, I've been on the bus of my favorite band, and I was trying to, you know, arrange to hook up on a tour with them, with my band, and that was my excuse. And luckily, my boss back then was pretty cool, and he let it slide. I was a little bit late, but I'm not really joking about. I'm dead serious about that bit of it with wanting to tour with Control Denied, because we lost out on the chance to tour with Death. There was just no possibility. Hammerfall was who Chuck chose for the Perseverance tour. And then when I was on the bus, I asked Chuck, "Hey, once you get Control Denied happening, you know, are you going to tour?" You know, and he was like, "Well, first things first, we've got to record the album, and then we can think about touring and, you know, all of that." So basically, where that led was, well, Shannon and I exchanged contact details, and Shannon and I kept in touch for quite a while, for years after that, even after Chuck passed away. And so basically, no, I didn't hear anything from Chuck himself after we met on the bus at the end of the night. He got sick, you know, and only people sort of really in the inner circle, like Shannon or Richard Christie or Scott Clendenin or Steve DiGiorgio, would have actually talked to him a lot during that period. Maybe a few people from Chuck's past would have resurfaced and kind of, you know, when they heard the news, would have been sort of wanting to express, you know, their sort of sympathy, I guess, or maybe, you know, try to patch things up if they had some kind of falling out in the past. I know that happened a bit, you know, after Chuck announced that he had cancer. But I didn't hear from him, and you know, I wish that I could have become better friends with him. I just really, you know, I hung out with him a couple of times, and that was really about it. People have erroneously said that, oh, this guy was really close to Chuck. I wasn't close to Chuck. I wish I could have called him, you know, a close friend, but no, we were just, you know, kind of friendly acquaintances, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. by that point, you know, 99. And kept in touch with Shannon, like I said, for a long time. Used to IM a lot, spoke on the phone a bit too, but haven't heard from Shannon in a while. If he's listening, hey Shannon, man, you know, shoot me an email or something.
As a member of the press, why do you see that maybe metal isn't so played so often on AM or FM radio? Maybe if it is, it's not like, you know, any like deep tracks or anything like that, like maybe not so many fans are behind the mics. And also your final thoughts on Chuck and his music for his birthday.
That's another mouthful.
Got about 5 minutes.
Well, I think that currently that metal is experiencing a bit more of a revival. Maybe it doesn't get played so much on mainstream non-satellite radio, but I think it gets played more than it was for quite a while in the States. But still, I think the same things that applied years and years ago apply now, and that's the whole payola thing and the sort of stigma involved with, you know, labels or PR companies or whatever paying off stations to make them play certain things. Mm-hmm. And if you're not on, you know, a big enough label or you don't have a big corporate machine behind your band, then you can forget it. So that's something to consider. It sucks, but it's been there since the dawn of radio. Not just with metal, but, you know, way back in the old days, it would have been with just rock in general when rock was sort of a new thing. Mm-hmm. This goes way back to, I can remember reading a lot about one of my favorite 60s bands, late 60s bands, Bubble Puppy. They're from Texas, and they had this single, Hot Smoke and Sassafras, and they were on a little tiny label in Texas called International Artists, it was. And basically, they ran into this thing where they had this hit song, and it was a hit everywhere but in L.A. and New York. And that was because, basically, that little label didn't want to pay their payola charges to the mob-run, you know, radio stations. And, you know, as a result, Bubble Puppy kind of didn't get the recognition they deserved. Mm-hmm. They could have been number one, you know, but that's the same thing goes for, you know, metal bands today who just don't have that clout, you know, behind them. The music biz has always been full of corruption, probably just as much as government.
Definitely. Any final thoughts on Chuck? Want to wish him a happy birthday?
yeah, happy 45th birthday, Chuck. I'll always remember you, man. And I'd just like to remind everybody that, the 13th of May every year, celebrate the life of Chuck. You know, let's celebrate on that day and always, you know, play some Death stuff and Control Denied and have a drink in Chuck's honor. There are definitely a lot of people out there since Chuck's passing who've caught on to Death and Control Denied, and it definitely warms my heart. And I think I've just actually caught on to Chuck's favorite word, definitely. It's contagious.
All right, well, thanks for stopping by the show. I'm going to play a song from your band, Destiny's End. It's called Idle City, The Fortress Unvanquishable, from the album Breathe Deep the Dark. I've been talking with Perry Grayson. He's the ex-guitarist of Destiny's End and also current guitarist and main founder member of Falcon. Check it out, falconband.net. Be sure to check out their music. So this is The Fortress Unvanquishable by Destiny's End. Thanks for stopping by, man.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be here with you.
No problem. KKSM AM 1320. Take it easy, man. Metal.